Angels with their fantastic wings being another of the many extraordinary misconceptions of the true way of things in spirit lands, it really is no wonder that in the end, with all these falsifications, the people of Earth regard us as subhuman. The higher we go in spiritual advancement, the less human we become, it would seem, and the more grim. Did either of you ever see a picture of an angel, or a piece of sculpture of one, especially in a cemetery, where the artist had put a smile upon the face of his subject? Smiling is not heavenly enough. Isn't it too awful for words? Aren't you very glad, Roger, that things are as they are, and not as they might be if some folk were given a free hand? I should jolly well think so, the boy agreed. A loud amen to that, exclaimed Ruth. Otherwise, I added, we should have to get all the doors heightened to allow sufficient clearance for our wings. Truth is better than fiction, in this case, Roger, and the truth of moving ourselves about these lands by the process of applied thought is the simplest and best. Now suppose you try. What do I have to do? Only a little thinking. You need not be alarmed. Everyone has to try at some time. Ruth and I were delighted with the results when we first managed, and you will be the same. We were sitting on the grass at the time, and I suggested that Roger desire himself to be at a tree we could see, some quarter mile distant. You need not make a gigantic effort of will, old man, I said, merely think firmly that you would like to be under that tree yonder or anywhere else you fancy. I suggest the tree because it's not too far off, and you can see us easily from there. As a good outset is half the voyage, Ruth and I will send a thought with you. Now, then, off you go. Of course, he vanished from our presence, as we knew he would, and we saw him beneath the distant tree, where he waved to us. We waved back, and then joined him. Well, did you enjoy the journey, Roger? Asked Truth. The boy laughed. There was nothing much to enjoy, one second I was there, the next here. But it is wonderful though, there's no getting away from that. What a marvelous feeling of independence it gives you. Wouldn't I love to have been able to do this back on Earth? My goodness, it would have frightened the life out of Mother, though. Yes, it has its possibilities on Earth, and its impossibilities. There it would revolutionize life. Here it is part of life, and has been, ever since there's been a spirit world. Here is something that occurs to me, said Roger. Would it be possible for me to lose myself? I mean, suppose I got out of touch with either you or Ruth, what then? You mean, I replied, suppose Ruth or I were to take you to some spot far away from this particular locality, and then disappear and leave you to your own devices? Yes, that's it. Then your own devices would get you out of your difficulty very nicely, Roger. Don't be disturbed, though. We shouldn't dream of abandoning you on a doorstep, so to speak, and leaving you for someone else to find. This is precisely what would happen. Suppose for a moment you could not conjure up in your mind any sort of recollection of our house, there is yet the connecting link between us, the three of us. And if the worst really came to such extremes, you would have but to concentrate your mind upon either Ruth or myself, and you would see and feel an instantaneous response. So that, wherever we happened to be, you could come to us. I say you could come to us, but it by no means follows that you would, because we might prevent you or send someone to do so. You see, my boy, Ruth and I penetrate into some very unpleasant quarters of the spirit world, places that we have not mentioned to you yet, and it would not do for you to approach them. Wherever Ruth and I might be, you would always be in touch with us in mind. Of course, you have not forgotten our house, its arrangements, and surroundings, so really the matter doesn't arise. Merely for the sake of argument, if you did forget, there's Radiant Wings' home and his delightful family. You could hardly fail to recollect all that we saw there, and so you would have that refuge in case of failure of memory, and he would look after you. But there's one thing to be considered, though perhaps we have not mentioned it specifically, and that is the impossibility of memory failure. That resolves your difficulty finally and completely. You've not forgotten our home and all its appurtenances, have you? No. Indeed not, it's all very clear in my mind. Exactly, and so it will remain. You cannot forget, because the memory is itself unfailing in operation. I know one can imagine all kinds of difficulties or perplexities of the same sort, but they have no substance, and cannot be otherwise. To lose oneself, for instance, impossible. To forget something or other, equally impossible. You spoke about a transport system, Roger, no doubt having in mind the usual earthly services and arrangements, trains, buses, cars and so on. As you see, we don't need any of those for carrying us about these lands. Yes, but suppose you want to move house. How do you shift the stuff? Why, we shouldn't find much difficulty, no difficulty, in fact, in moving it. We may not be giants here, Roger, but we do have powers and we use them when called upon to do so. We could, between us, move all the furniture in our house with the greatest ease, and feel none the worse for it afterwards. We shouldn't have blisters on our hands, nor strained backs. We could transport the whole contents of our home a dozen times over, while the earth folk were thinking about it and without fuss and breakages. We do move house when we feel we should like to live in another part of these realms. We are not necessarily tied to one spot, or unable to move without many formalities. The fact is, once we have chosen a spot in which to have our dwelling, we mostly stay there, at least until such time as we leave the realm altogether. But we don't become stale, as it were, or tired of our surroundings, for the reason that there are always changes of some sort going on, large or small, to alter or enhance the precincts of our dwellings. For instance, our house, as you see it at this moment, is not exactly as it was when I first arrived. With our various activities, we thought we should like to enlarge it for convenience sake, and so we had an annex built, the fairly large apartment we showed you, with the tapestries on the walls, the long table with the chairs round it, something in the style of a great hall in the ancient mansions on Earth, and in the spirit world, too. That was one alteration. The gardens themselves have undergone all manner of rearranging. That in itself is a delightful occupation carried out by real artists in horticulture and garden design. So you see, the movement of our goods and chattels presents no problem. We don't require great lorries and vans. The mere effort of one person can move the largest piece of furniture, because all things, everything, in this world are endowed with life. There's no such thing as inert matter, as I told you. Between us, we could remove the entire contents of our house or any other house without the least trouble. Now, Roger, would you care to go and see the city at first hand? You've only seen it from the house so far. Come along. Walk or otherwise? Otherwise, then, by all means. 7. The city. No one seems to be in a hurry, observed Roger. That's because no one is in a hurry. Oh, of course, that never occurred to me. Just so. If there's any need to hurry, one can be there as quick as thought. If there's no need, there's no hurry. We had reached the environs of the city, and we were on ground sufficiently elevated to give the boy a capital introduction to the metropolis in one comprehensive view. From where we stood, he could see the many stately buildings, each with its surrounding gardens and miniature lakes, radiating, as with the spokes of a wheel, from a grand central building. He remarked that there were no roads as such, but instead were broad thoroughfares paved with superb grass. Upon the dome of the central building he perceived a brilliant shaft of pure light descending, and inquired what it was. That domed building, Roger, we told him, is where we meet upon the more formal occasions to welcome the great personages from the higher realms. It is not precisely a temple, though one might call it that for want of a better name. Nor is it specifically a place of worship, as it would be regarded on earth. We hold no services there. When we foregather there to meet these great visitants, the whole assembly is never very long. Their visits are brief as a rule, though naturally we are seated comfortably a little while before they arrive, and remain a little while after their departure. But brief as the whole proceedings are, all that is necessary is accomplished within that short space. No time is wasted upon non-essentials or upon useless formularies. The bright beam you see descending upon the dome is permanently there. It must be an immensely strong light to be able to see it in this broad daylight. It is a strong light, have no doubt about it, and considering the source whence it comes, that's not surprising. It comes from the greatest source of all, my Roger. Yet the light itself is not blinding, is it? When we first talked to you about a city, you hardly expected anything like this. Did you, Roger? Ask truth, though that's rather a silly question, she added, because you didn't expect anything in particular like so many people. I don't know what I really expected. I suppose I had something in mind comparable with an Earth city. The secret is that we are much simpler here than the Earth can ever be unless the Earth radically alters its general mode of life. Rethink you, Roger, of the myriads of things we don't need here. In an idle moment you could compile such a list of commodities that are not required for life in the spirit world as would reach the dimensions of a store's catalog. Think, now. Start with the domestic arrangements of a house. Food, for instance. We don't need food, so that means the elimination of a huge industry comprising all the various departments of eating and drinking, and all the vessels and utensils for manufacturing it, cooking it, and serving it. Our clothes are provided for us by the operation of a natural law, another vast industry dispensed with. The transport system you have already seen here. Conspicuous by its absence. Very much so. Then think of all the trades and professions that have no counterpart or equivalent in these lands. Undertakers, for instance, suggested Roger with a laugh. Or politicians, added Ruth. Don't forget priests and parsons, even bishops, I said. Perhaps it would be as well not to be too specific. The undertakers are more pleasantly employed here, and the politicians more usefully. As you can see, Roger, of shops there are none, Ruth pointed out, because there is no commerce of any kind. Then what do you do when you want something? Such as? Well, he reflected a moment. I don't seem able to think of anything, he finished, with more surprise to himself than to Ruth and me. We laughed. That's rather odd, isn't it, Roger? You don't seem to want anything. Those clothes you are wearing are the clothes you arrived with here. By the way, whenever you feel you would like to change to your spirit clothes proper, you can do so at once. As you are attired now, everyone knows you for a new arrival. If you wish to appear as a seasoned resident, the same as Ruth and I, you will have to put off the old and put on the new. So there, at least, is something you would want spirit clothes to make the change. If there are no shops or tailors, what's to be done? Nothing, or at least very little. You would like to discard the old style of attire, Roger? I should very much. Then do so, my dear boy. Yes, but how? I'm afraid we can't tell you how it happens, but look at yourself, Roger. Your eyes have been on the view before you. Now glance a little nearer. The boy did so, and was astonished to discover that his old earthly habiliments had given place to bright spirit clothing, full and free, and in absolute keeping with the surroundings. Ruth and I did the same, and for the first time Roger saw us in spirit attire. Now you can see, Roger, how we should have appeared in your bedroom had we not returned to our former earth clothing. It might have frightened you. I'm sure of it, he said. He raised a fold of his garments, and examined it closely, and remarked that it did not seem to have been made by human hands. No, Roger, no hands were employed upon the creating of these garments. But truth, and I must tell you, honestly, that we do not know what natural process comes into operation in the making of them. There are many things we must know first, and so we take things as we find them. Did you, when you were on Earth, try to analyze every mortal thing that came your way in life, and try to discover how it was made, and 100 other reasons or causes for its existence? I'm sure you did not, neither did Ruth nor I. There's no reason why we should carry out minute investigations here into the existence of the many things that are part of our very life. It's problematical if we should be any the better for knowing. Our spirit garments are in a class by themselves, though. Do you see that large building a little to the right of us? That's called the Hall of Fabrics. In there you can inspect thousands of the most wonderful materials and cloths, some of them representing the fabrics that were upon Earth, all parts of the Earth during the course of hundreds of years. Others are types of material peculiar to the spirit world alone, both in design and in texture. You saw the tapestries hanging on the walls of our home. They were made by Ruth herself in the Hall of Fabrics. When we were first shown over that hall, Ruth saw numbers of happy folk weaving tapestries, and was immediately taken with the same idea. Since then she has become expert in the art, as you saw at home. It was nothing, said Ruth. You could do the same, Roger, if you had a mind that way. That's one of the principal functions of these places, to teach you to do all manner of things expertly. The Hall of Fabrics cannot supply you with spirit clothing, Roger, I said. It makes me feel terribly ignorant to see all these halls stuffed with knowledge. Then don't let it, my dear boy. After all, one can experience much the same emotion standing in the presence of a couple of dozen volumes of an encyclopedia, if it comes to that. We are not born with a vast deal of knowledge already to hand, as it were. Ruth and I felt the same way about it when we were shown all this wonders of knowledge, and so does everyone else. We're all in the same boat, Roger, so we can all be nicely ignorant together. I must say the people don't seem upset about it. These halls of learning are mostly devoted to what on earth are called the arts, I explained, by which I mean painting, music, literature, and so on. Great stress is laid upon those. There are, of course, many others. On earth the arts are regarded more as adjuncts to life than necessities. They could be dispensed with, though the earth would then be more drab than it is already. Here they are vital and are given a wide field. To begin with, without all those industries that we tried to enumerate just now, there is a corresponding freedom for other and far pleasanter occupations. There's one thing, Roger, that you won't see here among the arts, and that is musical monstrosities or art abominations masquerading as masterpieces. They have not been thrown out, they were never admitted, and never will be. No shams here, my Roger. Abandon all pretense, ye who enter. What does a person have to do to get taken on in one of these halls, Monsignor? Why, walk through the front entrance, and you will be left in no doubt. You will be welcomed with the greatest warmth, and set upon the path of studying whatever it is that has taken your fancy. That's how Ruth began, almost, with her tapestry weaving. She asked could she join the others and be taught the art, and forthwith, without any formalities whatever, she did so. And was never so happy in my life, put in Ruth. Charming people, patient and kind, especially if you are all fingers and thumbs, as I was when I began. Monsignor has spent an enormous amount of time browsing among the books in the principal library. That's a terrible place once you are interested in it. There are millions of books there upon every subject under the sun. Have you ever tried to look up something in an encyclopedia, Roger? Especially one that has good illustrations? Yes, rather, a hopeless business, there's so much dallying on the way. Then you can imagine what it's like there in the library. If Monsignor were ever reported missing in these regions, that is the first place where a search party would call. Let us go closer and inspect some of these buildings, I suggested. Are we allowed to go in as we like? Exactly as we like, Roger. No permits required. No opening and closing times, as they are open all day and that's not difficult as we have no night. Are the same people on duty all the time, then? Oh, dear, no, that would sound like eternal work instead of eternal rest. You could say truthfully that the work is eternal, but the same people are not employed upon it in an eternal succession without personal remission. We have no division of night and day. But the work is carefully divided among the staffs so that they can have their periods of change and recreation, and everybody is perfectly satisfied. Roger remarked that the buildings were of no very great height as judged by the usual earthly standards. Well, no, two stories of moderate height are sufficient here, as there are no problems of space limitations. We don't have to build upwards, we have unlimited room to spread ourselves, and the result, you must confess, is excellent. Roger expressed his unbounded delight with the beauty and charm of the whole creation with its broad thoroughfares of superb grass, the many flowerbeds and trees, the pools of crystal clear water that provided an exquisite setting for the many fine edifices that comprise the city itself. Doesn't it strike you as odd, Roger, that all this beauty, this superlative beauty, should be rather sneered at by so many of the uninstructed on earth? Doesn't the Earth recede into something like dingy insignificance beside all this splendor? Yet Earth folk, a great many of them, regard their world as the world by which all is judged, assessed, or appraised. The smoky, dirt, cities and towns of the Earth are made the criterion, and this lovely city is treated by them with something that seems remarkably like contempt, if not ridicule. Ruth and I between us pointed out the purposes to which the various halls were devoted, and at length Roger expressed his desire to investigate the interior of the Hall of Engineering, which also included chemical research. We passed in, and were greeted by the man who is in charge of the myriad activities that are in constant performance. "Why, Monsignor," said he, and Ruth, too. "This is a pleasure. We've not seen you for a long time. What can I do for you?" I explained our errand, and presented Roger to him. "Of course you've come to the right place, my dear friend." We smiled at this little pleasantry, as it has become almost a tradition that the man in charge of each of these great halls will, in similar circumstances, say precisely the same thing a justifiable pride. Perhaps of all the halls of learning, this, of engineering and chemistry, concerns the Earth most closely, since it is here that so many of the earthly engineering and chemical discoveries have their origin. Many new substances are invented in the spirit world that is subsequently transmitted to people on Earth for the benefit of all. As we passed from room to room, we could see chemists and their assistants experimenting with a variety of substances which in time will, when combined, form an entirely new product exactly fitted for its purpose. We were shown how, by synthesis, exact replicas of earthly materials were compounded, since it would be of no use whatever to invent a new substance of purely spirit materials which could not have any application to earthly uses. The scientist on Earth must use earthly materials, and the spirit world scientist must therefore work in a precise counterpart. It so often happens, our guide told us, that a mere hint to an earthly scientist is enough to set him upon the track of a dozen or more other discoveries. All that the scientists here are concerned with is the initial discovery, and in most cases the rest will follow. Here also were new substances to be used as building materials for houses or large edifices, and for many other types of building construction. New compounds were in process of being made that would eventually be converted into fabrics of all kinds, light and heavy, for personal clothing, for example, or for upholsteries in houses and homes. In the mechanical sections, old principles were being applied in new directions, to result in better and safer and more commodious means of transport, with greater comfort. Many inventions we saw, of all kinds, from some simple device for use in the home, to the large machine to be used in one industrial process or another. Life on Earth has become far too complex, and people are spending far too much time in purely material pursuits, usually to the exclusion of the spiritual. Life on Earth, therefore, must in the end become simpler, and in doing so will become more enjoyable. The spirit world has much to send to the Earth to achieve this end. But the Earth world has first to put itself in good order. What is of major importance, the people of Earth must learn to banish war from off its face, must learn not to turn to evil purposes that which was transmitted to it for peaceful purposes. In the latter lies disaster, in the former lies happiness. It is for man himself to choose. 8. We visit a church. We had left the city and were walking along the edge of a wood when Roger, pointing into the distance, said, "That looks remarkably like a church." "It is a church," said Ruth, "but with a difference." "Would you care to go to inspect it?" I asked, and Roger answering in the affirmative, we turned in that direction. The church in question had all the appearance of its familiar country counterpart on Earth, excepting, of course, that of age. It had antiquity of form without showing the effects of the ravages of time, and there was now no occasion for us to tell the boy that physical decay, brought about by the elements and the passage of years, was a condition that did not exist in the spirit world, and though an edifice might look as though it had been erected but yesterday, it may have been standing many hundreds of years. The church we were now visiting was no exception to the rule. In point of fact, I do not believe that, in the spirit world, there are any exceptions that are supposed to prove a rule. There were, however, other features about this church that Roger might have passed without realizing their full implication, and so, as we drew close to it, we asked him if he saw anything unusual about it. The lad had a very keen eye and was quick to seize upon the principal characteristic. "Yes," he observed, "the church has a familiar look about it, but its surroundings are so unusual that it almost makes the church itself look different." "Good for you, Roger," I said. "You've only recently come from the earth, and so earthly things are still fresh in your mind, as it were. You can make comparisons with greater fineness. The church you see here is a complete exemplification of what could be done on earth, if an effort were only to be made, in making the churches the things of real beauty in their externals. The whole of this has been built, including the fabric itself, to show exactly what can be done even in a limited space. As you can see, the territory round the building is spacious, but nevertheless, it has not been used to its full extent, so as to preserve, as nearly as possible, the customary conditions on Earth, where space is usually somewhat limited." As we drew near, we could see a low brick wall running irregularly round the church grounds in imitation of an earthly situation where other land rights encroached. The wall was trim and neat without being too plain and uninteresting. We passed through a lich gate, walking on a wide path that had been made of composite substance to give the appearance of asphalt, for in a matter of pure utility, a grass path would have soon worn threadbare under the tread of many feet, and our reproduction had to be exact. Flowers being in constant bloom in these lands, we had perforce to strike a compromise between what would be a general appearance in summer and that in winter. To do this, many evergreen trees and bushes were introduced, and the flowers were so planted that horticultural anachronisms were avoided as far as each bed was concerned. Some flowerbeds were left empty to suggest the extreme of winter when few, if any, flowering things are possible out of doors. Running along one side of the grounds was a small brook carefully confined to a straight course, and which had its source in a small cascade, while the sides of the brook itself were lined with flowers. Here and there were lily ponds, while the whole was encircled with many fine trees. In imagination, therefore, one could see the great possibilities of such an arrangement on earth, making full allowance for the infinitely greater beauty of a spirit world counterpart. Such a scheme and its fulfillment are here, and could be emulated upon earth with the removal of the unsightly and unnecessary burial grounds so often to be seen about church buildings, and so often nothing but a wilderness of weeds and neglect. Roger noticed at once the absence of a burial ground, to which so much importance is attached on earth, nor could he see anything in the way of a notice board. "Ruth told you there was a difference, you remember, Roger. There are differences within, as well as without. In truth, this is only a church in name and appearance, a sample of what could be done if earth folk had a mind to bring about a few alterations. It is only the outside, the surroundings that we are offering as an example, for this is not a place of worship in the earthly sense. In other words, there are no services held here, though what takes place inside is really of more value than what goes on perennially in so many of the earthly churches. Still, we won't pursue that line of thought. Let us go inside." We found the building empty of people when we entered. It was a fair-sized structure built on the lines of a parish church, and as it was no church in the strict meaning of the word, there was much absent that would otherwise have been conspicuous, the font, for example, and the pulpit. But what struck Roger most forcibly was the absence of a high altar. The sanctuary itself remained the same, with the usual flights of steps leading up in a series of orders, to the highest, where there was a broad space upon which were a number row handsome chairs, the chief of which, placed in the center, being slightly more ornate than its fellows. Above them was a fine lancet window, containing some exquisite colored glass instead of the familiar religious pictures. The glass represented pleasant rustic scenes such as one sees depicted in tapestries and the like. On the wall immediately above the chairs were two inscriptions worked in mosaic, and placed side by side. Roger's attention was immediately attracted to these, and turning to me asked, Why are those two beams of light coming down on the texts? They're not coming down, Roger. They're going up and out. The lad read the Latin inscription aloud. Gloria in excelsis Deo, et in terra pax hominibus boni voluntatis. Correct, Roger. But if you will forgive me, your pronunciation of the Latin is appalling. That was the way I was taught, he laughed. Of course you were, my dear fellow.